Chase Willie and D-Mace, Titans training camp here on a Thursday. They are wrapping things up with the limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, nature boy Ric Flair speaking to the team right now. They played the music and everything. I kind of geeked out. These guys were witnesses to it. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you, 615-737-1025. Willie's like, I don't see him. He's wearing, like, this colorful, like, it's like out of your wardrobe, this colorful jacket, sport coat.
If you didn't see him, Willie, something wrong. Chase actually stood up, like.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
You stand for the nature boy.
The nature boy.
The goat. His daughter, Charlotte, WWE superstar, is here, and I think that might be his son-in-law, Andrade, who is just got married to Charlotte, so both wrestlers.
Uh-huh.
But that's pretty cool. And now you hear the woos. Now you hear the woos. Woo!
That's good.
I would love for him to come over here. And we're if that happens.
Would you tell John Robinson to go
Chase
take a hike?
Think.
Honestly, I might. I'd be like, John, I love you. I'm going to need you to wait a second. Jared would lose his mind. Everybody would lose their mind if I did that. But, yeah, might have to do that. So we've talked about the quarterback tiers from The Athletic that Mike Sando puts out every year. And one that we haven't brought up yet is Daniel Jones. He's the quarterback of the New York Giants that the Titans will play here to open the season on September 11th. Reports from Giants training camp yesterday is that Jones was inconsistent in the early showing of training camp. To me, that defines his career. That's pretty much what he has been.
Uh-huh.
So what do the tiers tell us, Willie, about Daniel Jones and what the Titans could expect in week one?
Well, let's take a broad perspective. The Titans open up at home with the Giants, and you're sitting there going, looking at weeks 2, 3, and 4. Those are really tough games. You really want to hold serve and beat the Giants. But I'm always reminded about what Floyd Reese used to say every year when you had a game like this on the schedule. The bad teams don't know that they're bad yet.
Yeah, especially the first game of the season.
First game of the season, he would always
Everybody
say,
thinks they're good.
The bad teams don't know that they're bad yet. Everybody's got hope. Everybody's healthy for the most part.
Uh-huh.
You haven't started to see that attrition. And then, you know, when you play a bad team in week 13, a lot of those teams aren't really capable of beating anybody. They're just done, right? They're mentally worn down. They've had injuries that have – they know
crippled
they can't make
them.
It to yeah. – the, yeah, there's no hope. So playing the Giants week one is interesting because what did they do? They overhauled. They have a new head coach, Brian Daboll, who's an offensive guy. In theory, you'll have Saquon Barkley healthy for game one.
Exactly.
Which by the end of the season hasn't been the case.
Will he be healthy?
Yeah. So, you know, how scared are you of the Giants? So let's go to Daniel Jones. Uh-huh. They made the decision not to pick up the fifth year. So it's more like, okay, we're going to have Daniel Jones one more year. We'll kind of see. But the way he's tracking right now, it's going to be we're probably going to move on after this year. We don't really have anything
and
better
he will
right
be
now.
Relegated to a backup quarterback.
Yeah, he's going to go the Mitch Trubisky route.
Yeah.
And so on the tiers for Mike Sando, Daniel Jones is 30th. And I don't think anybody would disagree with that, right? He's a tier 4 guy.
Yeah.
I think
even though
be,
he's flashed.
I think he should be 34.
No. So you're saying if you could go lower, you'd put him lower.
Yeah, no, I'm just messing with you. Go ahead, Willie.
But that's tough, right? Uh-huh. If you're in a big market and you were a first-round pick and you got that, you've been a starter for that long, man, I can only imagine what his life is like. Because every now and then he plays a good enough game. He flashes with his running ability. So I'm wondering just what can Brian Daboll bring out of him? And in game one of the season, when they're playing the Titans, you got the element of surprise, right? They're not going to show anything in the preseason. They're going to be able to unveil whatever it is that he's going to try to do with Daniel Jones, and the Titans will see it for the first time. So does it get on your radar at all, or are you guys just sitting there saying Daniel Jones is not a threat, is not
so
a threat?
Let me say this real quick, Derek.
Yep.
I don't think he's very good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that – you know, he is what he is. But you always have to be weary in week one. We'll take a timeout on that conversation.
We'll come back to that.
Because Titan General Manager John Robinson has walked up to our broadcast location and John, welcome in. Good to see you.
Woo!
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I just told these guys, and I will say this to your face because I have a lot of respect for you and I like you a lot. If Ric Flair had walked over here and I had to pick between the two of you, I'm probably picking Ric Flair.
Yeah, I'd be inside eating lunch. I got it.
If you only knew how big of a wrestling fan this guy is.
I mean, it's Ric Flair. Come on.
Well, I told him. He came in early, uh-huh. And I said, I remember back in the day when I was a kid growing up in Union City, we had two TV channels, three if I went outside and turned the antenna to the south. And I'd swing it to the south on Saturday mornings and watch Jerry Lawler and the boys down in Mid-South. And occasionally I think he'd jump over and wrestle on those guys.
What was that, the NWA back then? Or was it
Memphis Mid-South Wrestling? Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Goodness.
So, John, good to see you. I mean, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's great to be back out here. It's great to be in a normal training camp without masks and distancing and Connexon devices and COVID testing every day. It's it's just back to normalcy, what we're accustomed to.
Now you can get in somebody's face and yell at them.
Yell at them, that's right.
So as we start training camp, you know, you and Mike have been together for a while now as head coach and GM. And, you know, while we're not privy to all the conversations behind the scenes, you know, it would appear you two are attached at the hip. You're on the same page. But I kind of, you know, you worked with Floyd Reese for a long time. I kind of liken it to he's a little more Bill Belichick. You're a little more Floyd, different personalities. But why has this been able to work so well with your relationship over the last several years?
Yeah, I mean, I think philosophically, you know, I really didn't know Mike integrally as he was a player.
Yeah.
And just the way he carried himself at practice, in the locker room. Philosophically, we're aligned on the types of players we want, the types of people we want. Doesn't mean that we have disagreements about this player or that player. You know, sometimes a player will tick me off at practice, and I'll go in his office, and he'll calm me down. And then other times somebody ticks him off, and I'll calm him down. But we balance each other off and try to get the best guys on the football team as we can.
Your job is never an easy one, especially if, you know, you make a move and you think it's going to be a good move for the team. Ultimately, it doesn't work, and then you have to decide, okay, we're going to move on because it didn't work. AJ's, that was different. That was obviously a different situation, and you get trailing out of it. But how have you kind of grown into that and adapted in your years as GM to make the tough decisions to know that, hey, you know what, I tried something, it didn't work, now I got to move on?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that I owe it and we owe it to the 52 guys on the active roster once we get to the season, the other 89 guys that are, you know, here in camp, that if something's not working out and it's not, you know, it's just not what we think is best for the team, that I stepped to the mic and I own it, and it was a bad decision on my part, it didn't work out. I just feel that it's better to move on those and make those decisions as hard as they are, sooner rather than later. You know, don't let it linger and continue on. Sure. Just turn the page and reboot and keep going.
We'll talk with John Robinson, Tennessee Titans GM. Now, John, I'm watching practice and I'm seeing the coaches run around, and I see one guy walk past me, and I have to double take, and it's you. Because you sort of blend in and fit in. And you typically don't see that from GMs. Like, GMs are usually, they try to separate themselves from the team because they got to make hard decisions. But you have immersed yourself with the team and with the coaching staff.
Yeah, I'm an old football coach, and uh-huh. That's kind of just in my blood. I like to be around them. I like to, you know, be over in the drills, close to the drills, encouraging. You know, if I see something and the coach jumps to the next thing, I'll say, hey, slam your hand in there on that, you know, outside zone play. Or not that I'm the coach, but I'm around the coaches enough. I know what they're teaching. I know what they're coaching. And I appreciate, you know, Mike not minding me be engaged like that. So, I think the players respect that, you know, because I'm willing to roll my sleeves up and get out here and work up a ladder just like they are.
And it seems like that's sort of the theme throughout the whole building. You see Amy Adams, when she's out here, she's engaged with players, she's engaged with media personalities. So it's not just you, it goes up the ladder as well with the owner, president, everyone else.
Yeah, no job is too small, and no job is too big for anybody to do it. You know, whether it's, you know, if there's a piece of paper laying in the floor, there's no need for us to call the janitor to come pick it up. Just pick the piece of paper up and throw it away, you know. So we're all engaged, we're all in this, you know, thing together. That's an oft-used phrase, but you know, I think we truly, that's something we try to embrace here is to help each other out and do all we can to help the team.
Now, Buster Skrine retires, you know, right before training camp. And guys, you see that around the NFL. Older guys sometimes do that. You see it more times than not. What have your conversations been with Vrabel as far as getting defensive backs here? Because you got to have the depth.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we felt pretty good about some. I mean, we're pretty young with that position. Mm-hmm. You know, at the corner position, we've got a bunch of younger players there. And they've continued to progress and improve. And we feel good about that. And you know, we met the other day with, you know, the veteran guys that are, you know, they're out on the street. And, you know, a lot of those guys are, from a timing standpoint, they're not necessarily maybe interested in jumping into training camp. They're waiting maybe quite towards to the last week or so. So we'll continue to have those conversations internally and then with, you know, their respective agents. And if somebody, you know, we worked a group out today and, you know, we'll probably have a move here soon with another younger player. I'm not going to get too far in the weeds on that. But we just got to have the numbers and the legs at that position because there's so much running with the receivers and the DBs.
Exactly.
John Robinson is with us, Titans general manager. And, John, I've been throwing a lot of numbers at Derek. The name of the game, it seems like, in sports a lot of times is you take the numbers, you take the analytics, you match it up with the eye test, and you have a balance there. You've got your philosophy on analytics. My question is looking at other sports. Like, I have a baseball background. It seems to fit a lot better in baseball. It's easier to use analytics in that game as opposed to football. So how do you try to come up with the best way to use all the numbers that get thrown your way?
Yeah, I think that – I mean, I did a podcast with Thomas Dimitroff over the summer, and I think he threw the question to me about analytics, and I think I said something like 90% is film evaluation. You know, I know that there's some around around town here that think we need to be more analytically driven. But what goes on behind the scenes is we have people on our scouting staff that do a ton of analytical breakdowns. Our pro scouting coordinator, Rob Reeder, created a program during the draft that analyzed where we were at in the draft, determined what picks it would take if we wanted to move up forward with this player, we needed to give this pick and that pick. And I used him during the draft for that information. We do the same thing throughout the course of the season. You know, if the guard's in a two-point stance 50% of the time, it's this. If the right tackle's in a, you know, three-point stance 75% of the time, it's a run play. We look at all of those numbers and all that data. We just don't have a team of six dedicated analytics people that sit there and, you know, spit out numbers. But we're doing it. The coaches do it. The scouts do it. And we rely on the data. But I will say, and to reiterate what I said with Thomas Dimitroff, it's when you're evaluating players, to me, you've got to watch those guys play the game. And I think that's certainly a tipping point for me in the evaluation process.
Also, when it comes to salary cap philosophy, there was a day and age, and I can remember when Floyd was in this position and he used to do a weekly hit with us. It was not fun for him at a certain point to hit where they had to release Derek and several other players, sort of moving that pile back. You seem to be a little more towards, hey, let's pay as much as we can. Let's try not to put ourselves in a position to where that could happen. Is that fair to say, especially with some of the decisions you made with the team that's in a window to win?
Yeah, that's a great observation. I mean, we did it this past spring with, you know, with Jackrabbit, with Roger Saffold. Both of those guys started for us last year, veteran players. But it comes a point when you're going to open up a contract and you're going to reallocate and convert to sign a bonus and you're going to push stuff out. At some point, you're going to have to pay the piper. Now, you can keep can kicking down the road a little bit, but Van Marino and I try to stave off the wholesale reboot where you've got to kind of, you know, knock the foundation blocks out from underneath it and basically build a brand new house. So we try to make strategic decisions along the way, and there's a lot of thought that goes into that and a lot of, you know, data that goes into that, but that's kind of the stance we've taken thus far.
In the NHL right now, the GMs know that the salary cap's not going to go up next year very much. How tough was that for you in that 1 year where maybe you had projected before the pandemic it's going to go to here and it really didn't?
Yeah, you've got to reallocate resources. we all had to. You know, it's like you think, because, you know, historically it's gone up about 10 to 12, you know, mil every year, and then you know, we get that 1 year, and it's like, okay, Ben, let's get our pencils out and let's go to work. It's hard. And you try to forecast it. Like, we're trying to forecast now, like, all right, what's it going to be like in the spring when, you know, free agency in 23 rolls around? Is it going to go up 8? Is it going to go up 10? Is it going to take a huge spike and go to 20? Nobody really knows. So you just try to base it off the historical progress, you know, progression of it. With the decisions that you're going to make.
Well, with that in mind, the forecasting, this is always the tough part. And I want to ask this in a way where maybe you could talk philosophy and not any one player. But, for example, the Braves, Chase is a big Braves fan, you know, they identified a younger player like Ronald Acuna, and they paid him before he became eligible for free agency, things like that. So when you're trying to weigh that and look in your crystal ball, when is the right time to invest in a guy that's one of your core guys? What goes into that? As opposed to waiting and waiting, where in football, you know, there's a lot different than maybe a baseball outfielder where there's less injury risk.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you certainly have to look at the player. What does the pool of players look like in free agency next March if you happen to lose the player? What does the pool of players look like in the draft if you happen to lose the player? Can you replace that player? What's the precedent, you know, with signing a player with years of service and where he was taken in the draft? You know, there's a lot of things that we look at. You don't want to be a team that sets precedent, you know. But you want to try to follow and try to do right by the players and take care of the players when you can. And we say that to all the guys. You know, we want you guys to make as much money as you can because this game it's a short game. And we're going to do everything we can to try to keep the guys that we can keep. But, you know, ultimately some of those decisions are hard and, you know, it's the decisions are a lot harder to make now than it was in 2016 when I first got here.
Now, was the COVID year, because you brought up that year and with salary cap and trying to manage that, was the COVID year the toughest year that you've ever experienced as a front office guy?
Yeah, there was a lot to manage from the standpoint, you know, that first year was – I mean, we were the, you know, the team that had the outbreak, and we were, you know, we were the bad boys down here in Nashville. And the reality is there were some things that went on that were out of our control because it was a virus that really knew anything about. And exactly. We unearthed some things that we shared with the league to help reinforce and improve the protocols. But it was tough, you know. I'm trying to manage the roster. I'm trying to manage and make sure the guys got masks on. I'm trying to make sure they got the tracking device. You know, there's just a lot of stuff along with the game plan and the scouting, and you're trying to get your scouts out on the road, but they can't really go out on the road. And there was just a lot. And then the evaluation of players, I would say, was extremely hard that year because we had minimal face-to-face interaction with those players. And – you know, it's mail order bride. I don't even know if that exists, but it's like you're drafting a guy and you really haven't sat in front of him. You hadn't shook his hand sometimes, and that's I don't really like that. You know, exactly. I want to look a man in the eye and get to know what he's about, get to know his background and his family, and see if I can read through the PS meter. And without that face to face interaction, it was really hard.
John Robinson, Titans general manager, is with us. You're in a position that you as a GM, you haven't been before, and that, you know, you inherited Marcus in his second year. Ryan, you make the trade for, he comes here. You've now drafted a quarterback in the third round, Malik Willis, that, you know, you want to develop and see what you have there. And I think you got a value pick where you got him, where he fell to. It was certainly good. But how do you kind of manage that philosophy of not throwing too much at him, because you don't have to. You have Ryan as your starter, but also giving him the reps that he can build in to potentially be your starter one of these days.
Yeah, I think that you know Todd and Pat O'Hara, that, you know, they meet and with Braves obviously, and, you know, script practice, and, you know, he's learning a whole new language. You know how that is, mate. Yeah. It's like you come in, you know, you've played this one offense, especially in college, where there's a lot of up tempo and he's not under center a whole lot, and he's, you know, he's looking at the sideline, and there's a, you know, there's a boat, an air horn, and a duck on the
when Oregon came out with that stuff, we were all going, what in the world?
And it's like, all right, well, I'm throwing it to the X receiver because I saw a lasso. Okay, so that's okay. And you're having to call a play, and you're having to read a defense, and you're having to work through your progressions. So that takes time on a young player, you know, and being under center. But he's improved a lot since he got here, you know, post-draft.
Sure.
just with our being able to articulate the play in the huddle. I thought his decisions were really good in the spring. You know, he's just got to work a little bit on timing. He's throwing to new targets, different players, faster players, you know, maybe than he played with at Liberty. So we're excited about having him. And to your point, Chase, I mean, he was, you know, we're sitting there in the third round and I'm looking at the draft board and it's like he's just kind of staring at us in the face. And it's like, well, it's take a chance on the guy, you know, and see what you got. You don't know.
No doubt about it. John, as we let you go, you know, we're about to hit the one-year mark since we lost our buddy Floyd Reese, and you know, who meant so much to us here at 102.5 The Game, obviously meant a lot to you in your career. I've been laughing a lot lately because I've just been thinking of fun stories that I've had with Floyd, but you were telling us one yesterday. But, you know, what's kind of one that comes to mind real quick as you remember Floyd?
Well, I'll go two. I don't know if I said the one on the air that I think is probably my favorite story. Mm-hmm. But we're sitting in draft meetings one time, and we're talking about players. And he would always, you know, we had a there's a position called money in on the defense, and it's kind of a bigger safety. And every safety and linebacker was a money guy. Floyd would go, oh, he's a money guy. He's a money guy. And I was like, gosh, damn, Floyd, there ain't – there's not 25 money guys in this draft. So we transitioned from that. I got a chuckle out of that, and we moved to the defensive line. And he's reading and talking about the player, and he's like, yeah, he's one – I mean, he didn't say he's a three technique. He didn't say he was a five technique or a nose. He said he's one of these no way-to-go guys. And I'm like, Floyd, what is that? He's like, well – he's like, you know, he gets in his stance and the play's called and he goes the wrong way and you're up and the coach is going, no, no, no. And then all of a sudden he gets a sack and you're like, way to go.
but okay.
But I was like, okay, I kind of got it, Floyd. Uh-huh. But the funniest story to me was we were playing we were actually back here in Nashville playing the Titans. And I was the college director and I came back. My family was in the stands. I'd been with them on the pregame and me and Floyd are going to the press box. And we walk across, and Floyd's got his suit on. He's looking sharp. And, you know, going to the press box, the concourse is right underneath. So there's, like, a group of fans that are like, we love you, Floyd. We love you, Floyd. And he looks at me. He goes, and why'd you want to fire my ass?
Where was the love?
That is fantastic. John, it's great to see you. Love your team. Let's see what happens with it, but good to talk to you. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, great having you guys out here. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. John Robinson, Titans general manager, joining us here at Titans training camp. Coming up next, we will talk about some things that he just said and give you more about after practice here at Titans training camp. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
We'll talk with John Robinson, Tennessee Titans GM. Now, John, I'm watching practice, and I'm seeing the coaches run around, and I see one guy walk past me, and I have to double-take, and it's you, because you sort of blend in and fit in. And you typically don't see that from GMs. Like, GMs are usually – they try to separate themselves from the team because they got to make hard decisions. But you have immersed yourself with the team and with the coaching staff.
Yeah, I'm an old football coach, and that's kind of just in my blood. I like to be around them. I like to, you know, be over in the drills, close to the drills, encouraging. You know, if I see something and the coach jumps to the next thing, I'll say, hey, slam your hand in there on that, you know, outside zone play. Or not that I'm the coach, but I'm around the coaches enough. I know what they're teaching. I know what they're coaching. And I appreciate, you know, Mike not minding me be engaged like that. So, I think the players respect that, you know, because I'm willing to roll my sleeves up and get out here and work up a ladder just like they are.
And it seems like that's sort of the theme throughout the whole building. You see Amy Adams, when she's out here, she's engaged with players, she's engaged with media personalities. So it's not just you, it goes up the ladder as well with the owner, president, and everyone else.
Yeah, no job is too small and no job is too big for anybody to do it. You know, whether it's, you know, if there's a piece of paper laying in the floor, there's no need for us to call the janitor to come pick it up. Just pick the piece of paper up and throw it away, you know. So we're all engaged. We're all in this, you know, thing together. That's an oft-used phrase, but, you know, I think we truly, that's something we try to embrace here. Just to help.
Titans general manager John Robinson joining us earlier on the show. Appreciate him. Jonathan Hutton of Outkick 360 is going to join us here in just a second as well. But guy, you know, I thought that was a good question, D-Mace, is, you know, John is out there. He's coached J-Rob sometimes. Uh-huh. But I think that gives him that firsthand view of what he needs to do.
Well, not only does it give him a sort of this, firsthand account or hands-on, connection with the players, it does, you know, because for so long that there was always that separation between player and GM. And I understand why it had to be, because negotiations, you may have to cut a guy. But I think some of these younger GMs are starting to find out. Even when I was in Baltimore, Ozzie Newsome, they're starting to figure this thing out. Like, listen, we have to have a relationship with these players. It makes things, as I know it may make things a little bit worse when you got to cut them, but it makes it better too, in a sense, because I know them, they know me, I know their family, we talk a lot. So in negotiations, sometimes it may make things a little bit smoother. But John's in it, he has his hands in the dirt, he wants to truly, like, this is, he considered this his baby. Like, listen, if I'm going to raise this team, I'm going to have a say in it. I'm going to get down and dirty with it. I'm going to change the diapers. I'm going to give the bottles. You know, I'm going to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and feed them. I'm going to do all those things, because when we reach that pinnacle that we want to reach, I want to say, hey, listen, I feel it. I understand it. I know what those guys went through, you know, and those guys appreciate it, man. They don't want to look up and see a guy, you know, every so often walk out and hands folded, evaluating guys. And guys don't want to see that.
Yeah. I think they like Vrabel for that same reason.
Exactly. Sure. Vrabel the same reason, you know.
Real quick, Adam has been waiting patiently through the John Robinson interview, and I left you holding last time, Adam, so I'm not going to do it again. He wants to weigh in on the wide receivers. Adam, welcome in.
I mean, yeah, dude, I would not expect you to do that to me twice. So
I'm not going to do it.
Listen to this, Chase. So I heard you talking about the Giants, and while they're not too scary on paper, they still do have, like, Saquon. And Daniel Jones, whether y'all like him or not, he's still capable of making plays. You know, I know the turf monster thing is pretty hilarious, but he's mobile. He's got a pretty big arm. And if you think back, man, I was so excited about the Cardinal game last year. I was like, that's going to be a good game. That was not a good game. That was a terrible game. We got beat by like 40, but we should have been beat by 60. They stopped playing in the fourth quarter. So I'm telling you, man, I expect more when Mike Vrabel has a little bit of time to prepare for a team than we got last year. And I'm not overlooking the Giants at all.
Okay. Appreciate the comments, Adam.
We were just touching on it. Is it maybe the worst time to play the Giants? Because in the great words of Floyd Reese, the bad teams don't know that they're bad yet. Now, the Cardinals last year, they were, I think, expected to be quite a bit better than the Giants are expected to be this year. Mm-hmm. But I think when Kyler Murray started doing his thing last year, that shocked some people, right? The way he played in that game, I don't think the Titans played great, but he did some things in that game where you had to go, ooh. Like, I don't think Daniel Jones will do that in week one. But I'm just saying that you got a new coach, you got a new offense, you got Saquon Barkley fresh. It may not be the best time to play the Giants. It's not a gimme.
Well, it's never a gimme in the NFL. It's not. Regardless if a team isn't doing so well during the season or if they're great, it's not a gimme that you're going to walk out there and you're going to beat this team. It's just not the way it is. You know, many assume that's the way it is, but it's not. But be expecting the best of the New York Giants when the Titans play on first game of the season.
Coming up next, we're going to bring in Jonathan Hutton of Outkick 360, get his thoughts on practice today and maybe Ric Flair as well. But first, Will, you're going to tell us about QC Kinetics.
All right, QC Kinetics wants to keep you moving, keep you active. If you've got that joint pain and it's been bothering you for a while, you probably know about the traditional treatments, but you may not know about the new ways. And that's what QC Kinetics wants you to know, that there's a better way to treat joint pain, hip, back, arthritis. Check out the local medical professionals at QC Kinetics. They're the nation's leader in regenerative medicine. Advanced, exciting, natural alternative that can give you lasting relief using your body's own healing power. So we're talking about no drugs, no downtime, no surgery. So you owe it to yourself. Explore this. This might be the right treatment for you. They can treat any pain in any joint and give you back that quality of life that you've been missing. When it comes to doing the things you love to do, hunting, fishing, golfing, swimming, if you've been hindered by some joint pain, you know it's not as easy to do it. So check out the regenerative protocols that QC Kinetics offers. 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024. 615-249-4024 for QC Kinetics.
Back here at Titans Training Camp, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. All of our training camp coverage is presented by USA Hemp Store and Parman Energy, your one-stop petroleum solution. You say hello to Jonathan Hutton of Outkick 360. You can, of course, hear that show 2 to 5 weekdays on 94.9 The Fan. And yesterday, Treylon Burks was the MVP of training camp on the first day, which was good. But what did you take away from day two?
Day two was way back down compared to what I was not here yesterday. What I heard yesterday was, which is a very competitive practice. Burks, to his credit, for as much grief as he received from me and others about how OTAs and first impressions were not met to the great grandeur of a first-round draft pick, he deserves credit for what he did yesterday because he was the talk of practice on day number one. So that's fantastic if you're Treylon Burks, but now it's about stacking practices together. We won't know that until they put pads on, which is next week. The joint practices will be ones that I will make sure I'll make an appointment to come out and watch because that's when they're actually going to get the one-on-one work. How we'll evaluate this team in the preseason. It won't be the preseason games for the starters. You know, I saw the report yesterday about Henry's not going to be playing in the preseason, and I'm like, it's a report if he does. Right, like that. Right. That would shock me.
Sure.
And for the majority of starters, for the first two, for that matter. So I'm eager for the joint work against the Bucks and the Cardinals, and seeing how some other roster positions shake out depth-wise.
Do you think that this could be one of the, if not the most important rookie class in John Robinson's tenure as GM, of actually getting something out of these guys just because of Treylon Burks obviously being at the top, but he drafted a corner in the second round as well. Willis, you'll have to wait and see, but there's obviously some pieces there, that, and they haven't gotten a ton out of their rookie classes right away.
Yeah, I mean, the 2019 class is pretty good on how they are stacked right now. You know, and I want to be careful in buying into the line of thinking that this is the rookie class that has to make an impact because I have preached that for the last 2 years, and they have been able to overcome, and that's Vrabel's credit.
He made the comment
about he doesn't want to be judged based on the talent he's coaching. He wants to be judged on the coach versus what he has, and I'm paraphrasing that, but, I mean, that's what won him Coach of the Year. And, Willie, you're right. I mean, it's crazy when you consider the lack of improvement from the recent draft classes, if they're still even around. You know, that's unusual, and that's why, you know, if we had the off-season topics once, we'll have them 100 times about a window and a door being open or closed. You're able to keep the window open further, longer, if you can hit on a few draft picks, especially your high ones. So, Chase, I mean, they've got to hit on Treylon Burks.
No doubt.
Based on what they traded away and the wide receiver group as a whole right now. So, yeah, he's a big one. But I don't put a ton of, like, you know, there's – The right tackle, Nicholas Petit-Frere. Radins is the guy that needs to be a hit this year. Petit-Frere can come along, but based on what I've seen through the offseason and just my one observing day of practice, to me it looks like they want Radins to claim the position if he can. And, again, we won't know that until the joint practices really start rolling.
We'll talk with Jonathan Hutton. You can follow him on Twitter on Hutton Outkick.
That's it.
And Outkick 360, at Outkick 360. Now, Jonathan, we discussed earlier in the show that because this offense has so many new moving parts at key positions, whether it's Woods, Burks, trying to figure – you just talked about the offensive line, trying to figure out the offensive line situation. Is Derrick Henry going to be the Derrick Henry that we saw the last couple of years? Does the defense, and are they capable of sort of holding this thing together until the offense really gets going?
I think they are, under the condition that the offensive line is cohesive pretty early on. Because I think for as big as this defense is, they are built in the trenches. And just the mentality of the team, if we're just describing them, it starts up front on both sides. So I think that I don't want to overlook the two starting positions that need to be figured out on the O-line, and they need to work. But do they have time? Yeah, because I think the defense, D-Mace, is going to be – I mean, they were sixth in scoring for defenses last year. I think they can be a top two, three. And by saying that, I'm saying they could be the top defense in the league. If Caleb Farley ends up being what Jeffrey Simmons became in year two and begins that development, because we were heralding him through what we were hearing in the draft, the same way we heard about Simmons. But, man, it's a bargain based on where he fell in the first round. This guy's a top five, top ten talent. Well, if he plays to that capability, this is a legitimate defense at every level. Both corners you can trust. You know the defensive front should be better and more productive earlier this year because of the way they finished last year. I know everything's not created equal. And I think Cunningham is in a great spot with Vrabel's defense. So I like the levels. Plus the two safeties, it's Byard, but Hooker as well. Hooker's one of the most athletic dudes out there when I see him flying around. So I'm eager to see him take the next step, and I'm really curious to see how they move him around. The defense can hold firm, but, I mean, they've got to get points. The defense was outstanding against Cincinnati, and they lost
still
that game.
Lost, yeah.
They had a historical day, Willie, and they lost that game.
Oh, they did. They played well enough to win, no question. Jonathan Hutton is with us. So you mentioned Zach Cunningham. It does seem to me that anytime they have a chance to talk about Cunningham, they are really excited about him for a full year, knowing the scheme. Of course, they knew him from the Houston days. We talked to Bud Dupree yesterday about it. He may be less talked about, and the rap on him, of course, is he's not a pass coverage guy. But in the run scheme, he's probably as good as anybody in that. So how do you think he fits with this scheme in particular now that he's been here?
Well, I mean, he is what Rashawn Evans should have been, right? Like the consistent player and a guy that whenever he was in Houston and doing things with Titans Radio, I knew that – they were planning for certain guys offensively, defensively with the Texans. He was one of them. And Vrabel, when he came in, has a ton of respect for him. So he always circled him defensively. So it was a no-brainer that they placed the claim in. I'm stunned that the Texans just let him go, considering all the turmoil last year. And I asked David Culley about that. We recapped that.
Yeah,
and he was firm on it. He was like, it was my decision. I was tired of certain things not going in the team's favor and individuals not looking out for the team, but there has been no sign of that here. And despite that being the talk, they were quick to put a claim in. And it really helped them because this year, I mean, consider if they don't get him, how that changes this offseason. Mm-hmm. Because they lost Jayon Brown. They weren't going to bring back Rashawn Evans. They didn't pick up his fifth-year option. And they have David Long, who's now ascending into the lineup, but not the other guy. And they would have been replacing both. And, you know, do you have to take a guy earlier? Do you take Treylon Burks? Do you trade A.J. Brown if you don't? Because the linebackers around where the Titans were selected in the first round were being mentioned for them. And then they go out and grab Cunningham around the trade deadline or the waiver wire. So – it's worked out in their favor, and he's a really good player. He's a battering ram who he can do just enough in coverage. I'm with you, though.
Yeah.
He's not the cover guy, but he's not going to be used in that way.
Treylon Burks, punt returner. We heard that today. We saw him out on the field.
Yeah.
That always sparks the age-old discussion, right? Your first-round pick, you need him to produce at wide receiver, and there are those that will say, why in the world would you put him out there on a punt team?
I am of the opinion that I want my best players with the footballs in their hands at all times. You know, D-Mace was an excellent kick and punt returner. He was an excellent wide receiver at the same time, and there's a reason why you wanted the football in his hands.
At a certain point,
well,
he sort of rotated off of that spot. Once it was like, hey, this guy's a really good wide receiver.
I think Kyle Phillips gets that job here.
Okay.
And
interesting.
And watching him work and then reading the draft stuff as soon as they selected him. The only game I watched of UCLA, I'm not a pretender here. I watched the LSU game last year, and where the game where UCLA manhandled them, it's rare to see LSU go out west and get manhandled, and they did. But Kyle Phillips was putting – he's got a little juke to him. He's much taller than what I expect. He's a four-star recruit out of high school, and I think he'll end up getting the opportunity. Burks, though, can do it. And, I mean, A.J. could do it for that matter if you needed him to in an emergency. I don't know if they're looking at him more in an emergency case or not, but one thing I do know, I would not put him out there in the preseason.
No.
But it sounds like they're going to. It sounds like they were – he might try that, but I don't know.
I'm fine with him catching punts
catch
from the jug machine or whatever. But I don't need that. Put Phillips out there, and then Phillips wins the job based on the preseason work. That's how I see things going in the crystal ball.
The only thing I'll say, though, is that you don't know – and I'll use a Dory Jackson as an example. You don't know a guy's ability to read when to catch it, even if you get no yards. Just don't let it drop and bounce 20 yards. You know, don't try to make a great catch and fumble it. I don't know if you really know that with the jugs gun, you know, with the jugs machine shooting it up in the air like that. You know what I'm saying? You have to see a guy in the game where the guys are barreling it. What do you think about that, D-Mace?
I think, you know, the jug machine is sort of it's just that.
I like
it's
when the linemen try to catch it.
You got
to
have it out
offensive
there.
Offensive line versus defensive line trying to catch the
you don't want your kicker kicking the ball all day.
Have you seen the other punter out here, Stonehouse?
No, I haven't.
I'll be the first to ever mention him. The backup to Brett Curd right now, I mean, A.J. Trapasso hit the screen in Dallas. This guy would hit the screen every time. Mm. Put an eye on him tomorrow if you're out here.
I've heard he has a leg.
I'm curious from your vantage point. What's
I think he has two legs.
That dude, it is a missile off his foot. Oh, it's amazing. And it's consistent. He hit a bad one today, and it still was in the air for 5 seconds.
Wow.
And that's what you want, that hang time as a kicker. Go.
He is Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, weekdays from 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan and the Outkick Network. Hutt, good to talk to you, and we'll do it again soon.
Thank you, guys. I look forward to the coverage. I'll be listening on my drive-in to work, so I'll continue to do that.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Hey, and Willie, work on the air conditioner out here. I remember days when –
you remember we had that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. People don't even realize. We don't have enough time to say it, but we had a full air conditioner in the tent. There was so much air wasted, I think, but we were cool for the training camp.
It worked amazing well. And sick at the same time.
Not maybe the best thing for the environment, but hey, it created a nice environment.
Well,
for us.
I felt like, man, I'm such a wuss by going in here.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do, man.
All right, we'll see you, Jonathan. Appreciate it. Coming up next, a chance for you to win 3 ICE tickets. We'll do that next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Back here, 102.5, 106.3, The Game at Titans training camp. Appreciate Jonathan Hutton for joining us from Outkick 360. He will be a regular on this show as we talk all things Titans with him. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. As we appreciate John Robinson. It's been a fast-paced hour. But if you want to win a pair of tickets to 3 ICE, North America's premier 3-on-3 ice hockey league, which will be at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday, August 6th, you need to be caller number 3 at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see 3 ICE. Jill Jelinek of Fox 17 is going to join us here in just a little bit as well. We will also talk to Gerald Glover, the AD at Austin Peay, about some things that they have going on up in Clarksville. We'll do that at 1 o'clock. So John Robinson came and sat at our table. You know, we talked a little bit about you know, him and working with the team and being able to evaluate. But what did you guys make of his comments on Malik Willis and just that process of where they got him in the third round? And was there any indication of what that could mean for this year?
I think the indication you get from John is, listen, we got a guy that we didn't think was going to be there in the third round for us. We had already addressed the receiver position. We had addressed the cornerback position. I believe they had addressed the running back position as well at the time.
Offensive line.
So they felt, listen, we've addressed a few of our needs. This guy's still sitting here. It's a no-brainer. And we don't need him to be our starter this year or even into next year, because Ryan is still under contract for the next 2 years. We can develop this kid, learn the way we operate and do things, pick up on the speed of the game, because it's totally different from him coming from Liberty. And he spelled it out. Listen, You don't have the boards on the sideline no more, you know, telling you which guy to throw it to. You got to listen to the play in the headphones, regurgitate it to the players, and then have the confidence enough to go to the line and read the defense and then go from there. So what I take from that, from what John said, is, listen, we're going to bring this kid on slowly. Now, if he shows that he's ready to go and can be the second, okay, fine. But he's a backup right now, third stringer, and his learning curve is going to be what it is. But we're not going to rush him into anything.
Did you ever know what they meant? Remember when those offenses, I think Oregon was the first one I noticed doing it, with the big cards that John Robinson was talking about, where you look over to the side and there's a code. It's like a baseball third base coach, you know, some version of that. But instead of the guy giving you the shirt is the steal and the belt is the bunt, they had the card with any number of things on that card. Like, I'm sure it was something pretty simple.
I still don't know what it means.
I have no idea. But, like, I wonder what – I would love to have somebody – take me through that. Yeah. Now that it's over, like, okay, here's 2015 or whatever. Here are the cards. Okay, tell me what I'm looking at.
Exactly.
I would love to learn that.
Coming up next, Joe Rexroad of Robbie and Rexroad and The Athletic has released his first 53-man Titans roster. And I'm curious about some things. We will discuss that coming up next as you listen to Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, The Game Nashville app.